Well, I think that's been an absolutely amazing evening talking to you, Dana. I am so grateful for your time and coming on. I know we've overrun, but honestly, it's been absolutely amazing. And oh, and Richard wants to come say hi, if that's all right.
Perfect.
Hey, Rich.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dana. Hi, guys, everyone on board. It's just amazing. You know, the technology since, was it 2016 that you started with your open APS? Was it 2016? I read your book and I've lent it someone and I've not got it back yet. But you know, that is just it's just like it's just amazing. You know, it's just like, I mean, I'm 53 year old, but I've got so much. I just can't thank you enough, because that book was like the Bible to me, because I've been diabetic since 1984. I've seen it all. I've had glass syringes, egg rapid, NovaPens. I've had everything, and it's just been, you know, that book has completely rewritten my last 3 years of my life, all for the better, you know. And I keep saying to Tom, I'm going to get together and everything, but honestly, it's just dreamlike, you know, to be able to have technology help everyone. You know, I know, like pacemakers and heart things, you know, you can have pacemakers to control your heart, you know, your if you get arrhythmia or whatever, you can have a pacemaker to control it, you know, like Christian Eriksen. He had a cardiac arrest on the football field, but he's still playing football. Technology is so advanced, everyone needs to be able to access it. And I know it's hard, but you know, the work Parth and Emma are doing, the rest of the diabetic community in the UK and you guys in America, crikey, that everything's looking so good. It's so good to be part of it. And peer support is huge. You know, I in 2018, I went one November evening, it raining, up to a local hotel, met these guys from the Derby Facebook group, Type 1 Facebook group, Alistair McClay, Sean Carpenter, all the guys that are relatively local, and they just gave me a list of what I needed to look at and where to go and to have a read of it. And then I read your book, and it was just like, oh crikey, it's just an incredible platform to share, read about things. And I know many people aren't as tech savvy or as technically minded as some people, you know, but you know, I mean, obviously I opted for the Android platform, basically because my Apple phone got run over. I got it ran over, but the Android option was probably better for me. And I've never looked back. So I want to put my hand on my heart and say thank you so much for all that you do. You know, I've donated my scientific part, you know, like on Android APS. That's going to the cloud somewhere. And if that can help one or 1,001 people, so be it. It's just incredible that we can all get together and share and learn. And it's just amazing. You know, brilliant stuff.
Well, thank you so much.
The only downside I have at the moment is my Libra. Every now and again, I get one fail, and I'm not using Dexcom. I've just got a Libra 1 because I've got a Meow Meow, and obviously it's using that to rip the information from the sensor. But when one fails, the only downside, it suspends your insulin delivery, so that's a bit of an issue. But everything else, you know, when it's working really smoothly, it's just amazing. And now the commercial looping, well, the commercial looping is going to become an active, well, play an active role probably next year, or you know, well, probably within 12 months. It's just incredible, you know, how that technology that's been developed over the years, you know, mainly from you know, you guys in America. It's just changed so many people's lives for the better. You know, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Which
What's always been a global community, a lot of the early developers of OpenAPS who contributed are from the UK. So I happen to be from the US, so people think US, but it very much is a global community who's made this
yeah,
happen.
Tim, I know Tim Street. He's I've never met. I mean, I'd like to come to one of these diabetic get-togethers, you know, seminars or whatever. You know, they're just I know Tom went probably a month or 6 weeks ago, Tom, didn't you, Dan? Was it down London? I'd love to be part of it, you know. and just come and share my journey, really. You know, I remember checking ketones with like clue test tablets, and oh, it was, oh crikey, it's just unbelievable what how things have developed over those 35, 38 years. You know, it's just amazing how technology is able to help everyone. Just tremendous.
Dana, I have a question for you as well. For APS, were you like an actual developer for it, as in you like wrote code and stuff, right?
I was not.
You was not. Okay. Well, I had a bit of a unique situation, I guess. I'm an Android user, and I have a watch that runs Wear OS, which is Google's sort of watch platform. And I know it's not specifically for APS, but I thought if you could get your developers on it, you could make one that's also compatible with APS. I'm after a watch face for Android Wear that will let me see real-time data from Dybox, which is what I'm using. But in theory, if your developers got on it, they could use it to make it compatible with Android APS or something. But all I want is a watch face that I can have the normal widgets on, a bit like if you've got an Apple Watch, you get complications like you can tap on one and it gives you your music, tap on one, it gives you your calendar, whatever. All I want is a big widget that shows my sugars and the arrow direction it's going, and the ability to play and pause my music without having to scroll through a million menus to get to the sort of remote control music. And no one does it. The closest I've found is something called wearable widgets, which takes the widgets that you can put on your home screen, kind of again, same as iPhone, they have widgets on the home screens now, and it puts it on the watch. And Dybox does have a widget, but I don't want to be using 1,000 different apps to do it. All I want is a watch face that I can just flat out install on my phone. And I don't know, I just wondered, obviously, I didn't know whether you were actually developing or not. I'd
Oh,
just
I
like a watch
develop.
face
I
that could
just
do
don't
it.
have that background. But
That
I know
makes sense.
there's some really great Android APS watch faces, and I don't know if you could look at that and then slightly modify that to just pull in your Diabox info, or work with somebody who's
I'm not much of a developer. I mean, I have very, 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 very basic sort of experience in like one programming language. So I'm not massive. I'm good with IT, just not massive in programming.
No. But you can take a look at the watch faces and then be like, "Hey, Tim, I see you developed this watch face. I want to plug it with a Diabox." And most of the folks who develop this stuff are very, very happy to, modify to a new plugin or CGM source. So don't rule yourself out. If you find one that you like, or you're like, "Oh, I want to tweak it this way, help me."
Dybox does have support for sharing the data with Xtrip and Android APS. Now, if I can get that to work, like if I can install Android APS, I'd be happy with one other app, but I have no idea how to even get half of that working, because I don't have a loop or anything like that. I'm just standard insulin injections, and I'm happy with that for now, with my Libre. But all I want is to see real time data. When I took my wrist, I'd have to unlock my phone, however many million times a day that I do my sugars.
Yeah, no, that's a great use case, and I think like that's how most of the really cool features evolve. If somebody comes in and is like, "Here is my what I want to use and how I want to use it," and somebody will come in and say, "Oh, these are the four watch faces," and you pick one, and you're like, "Oh, this is the perfect one," or this, but change this, and then somebody will help you tweak it.
Fair
So you
enough.
should tweet
If
that
I drop
wish
you a
of,
DM,
"I
can you
want it
point
to
me to
look
a
like
few?
this." Yeah, tweet me,
If I
and I will help translate and communicate that wish to the folks who are doing Android APS watch faces, because I think you should definitely hook up with them.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dana. Honestly, thank you so much for coming on this evening. It's been amazing chatting, networking. Like going through the amazing chat, people interacting, sending questions on the hashtag, people coming up, jumping on the mic, and Renz has just tweeted, "A morning that starts hearing Dana Lewis's voice is a good morning. Hashtag diabetes chat." Love that.
Well, Rinza did not hear the part about peer support, but Rinza, I was talking about our group chat and people with diabetes keeping us going through the pandemic, and Rinza is one of those people who's kept me going. So nice to see you pop in, Rinza.
Dana, what's the biggest sort of leap that you see coming with diabetes, whether it be tech, standard medical care, or anything like that? What's the biggest leap that you see happening?
Hopefully faster insulins, and then just better use of all the data and technology we already have. So normalizing the interaction between our devices and our phones, and hopefully changing the regulatory environment so we can have more quick evolution and improvements on mobile device interfaces and interoperability with said devices. That's not so much as a prediction as wishful thinking. And if I could run the world, those are the things that I would do. I'm not in charge, clearly. I have no sway, but that's like the, you know, say the world the way
maybe
you
will one day.
Dana, it's Philippa again. Can I ask, what insulin do you use with your loop?
I am mixing an ultra rapid and a not ultra rapid, about 50-50-ish, thanks to all of the wonderful people in the UK who experimented first with ultra rapids. I watched very closely and saw people who, you know, started to have pump issues pretty early on and saw the community who were, you know, sharing their data about mixing. So when that became available to me, I started mixing the insulin I had with an ultra rapid, and that has been working well for me for a couple of years now. I think I started before I broke my ankle. So it's three-ish years now or more that I've been doing that, and thankfully works just fine in the pump, no site issues.
Do you have Lyumjev?
I honestly can't remember if it's been approved here or not. I think it's been approved, but I have not tried it.
I've tried that.
It is available in the US.
Well, without some of the issues that you get with Fiasp.
Chris, have you tried it?
I did. I actually ran a test using it 50-50 to compare with the straight Humalog that I normally use.
And how'd that go?
No site issues or anything. I did notice the sting that most people have mentioned when trying out the Lyumjev is I think that's been attributed to the extra drug that's in there to help speed up the absorption a little bit. I managed to shave a few percentage off my time above range, but I mean we're into the area where there's diminishing returns that are even possible. So you know, if you're only above range 10% of the time, shaving more than a few percent off is increasingly difficult.
Yeah, I would love to see fast out.
I think that's the biggest thing is reducing that that sort of terminal half-life.
Yep, exactly.
If it didn't hang around nearly as long, we wouldn't have half the problems that we do.
Yeah, I always talk about, you know, the pooling under the site. Some people just don't experience that. And I don't know if it's because of where they place their sites, but especially on my back hips and my legs, doesn't matter what I do. I can have zero IOB or negative IOB, and there's always insulin pooled there. And it always comes out when I go for a walk or a run. And I would love for that insulin to just stop being insulin under the pooled site magically at a certain period of time and just deactivate. That's kind of a pipe dream.
Yeah, no, I was in a trial. Don't even remember what it was that they were looking at, but I had just switched my site to my leg, and it seems like that site was just resistant or whatever. And I was using Control IQ at the time, and it keeps pushing more and more insulin, trying to bring me down. And it finally all started coming down when I got up at 4:30 a.m. to drive down to the trial site. And then all of the insulin seems to like hit me all at once. And I wound up going low even before they started the procedure. They were feeding me juice, trying to keep my blood sugar up just in case. And I think they wound up having to actually throw out the data from my day.
Oh, bummer.
In the lab, just because it was weird. And they kept asking me, like, did you take extra insulin? Did you take extra insulin? And I'm like, no, here's my pump record. You can see every unit that I gave.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell when you put on a new site. Is the site just not a good site, or is it just a little slow to get started? And one of the things that I found is really, really helpful, and this is like not specific to AID, but I didn't discover it until more recently, is I always leave my old pump site on instead of ripping it out. And that way, if my new site seems a little slow, I can always pop back onto the old site, do a bolus there to keep my blood sugar in range, and then go back to the new site. And then if I start rising again, you know, I can decide whether I pull that one out and put another new one in, or stay on the old site for another day or whatever. But it gives you way more flexibility. And I feel like it helps me better judge of, is the new site just slow, or is it like just really, really not a good placement, and I need to completely get rid of it. So for anybody who hasn't thought of that, I don't know why it took me 15 plus years to decide to do that, but that's made pump site changes a lot better the last couple of years for me, and the switching and having the old one to go back to, if assuming the old one's not really bad. But if your old one's still fine when you get to the point where you want to change, that might be something people want to consider trying.
Absolutely, cosign. I do the exact same thing. I've also found it helps sometimes. Some sites seem to just need a little bit more of a prime to get going, giving it an extra half unit or full unit or something like that, just to kind of tip it over and get it started absorbing, seems to work sometimes.
Yeah, the hard thing is it's so hard to predict with those. And I would love, this is something else on my, I wish people would study lists, because I think it'd be really helpful. My other theory is that if you've just done a big meal bolus on your old pump site, and then you rip it out and put a new one in, I think you lose some insulin out of the hole. Or if you had some insulin pooled under the site, I think a little bit comes out. How much? No idea. But enough that you might then think your next pump site is a little slow or not working, because the insulin that your pump or your AID system is counting on working isn't actually in your body. So that's another reason why I leave pump sites on, is just any insulin that went in that old site, I want it to actually fully get a chance to work in my body. But I would love to see somebody study, like, how much of that insulin do people typically lose depending on, you know, how close they do a big bolus to when they actually pull the site out? Is it, you know, 30 minutes you're fine, or is it really 3 hours that you need that old site in there to make sure you don't lose, you know, any of that big meal bolus that went in?
Well, especially when we're talking about microliters.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dana, obviously the great thing about Twitter is seeing and connecting with different people from all over the world, and it's great to follow and keep in the loop of what people are doing. I just saw a post Ben put on Twitter not long ago, just saying, and he's just asking is anyone got any recommendations for any diabetes books, any type 1 diabetes books? Do you have any recommendations that you would maybe say to Ben to go check out?
I'm going to let Chris answer this question, because I'm biased.
Bias is okay.
Well, I already tweeted out Dana's book. I don't know what else. In my mind, sort of the canon, if you will, is obviously Think Like a Pancreas, Gary Shiner's book, and then Pumping Insulin by John Walsh. And then sort of recently I've sort of added to, in my mind, Sugar Surfing by Dr. Stephen Ponder. Those are sort of the big three, with obviously Dana's book fitting in there and overlapping some of it with other things, and it all jumbles up, and they're all complementary. But if I was, especially outside of the specifics of automated insulin delivery, I think those are the three that have helped my understanding the most. And I see those three recommended frequently online whenever someone asks the question. So that's kind of my go-to answer.
And for those who buy books through Amazon, those tend to be like the automatic generated recommended. If people also liked, or people also looked at and bought, those tend to cluster.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Ben. Hopefully you're listening, buddy. Hopefully that helped you.
And I see a question here on Twitter following up about mixing insulin. The concept of mixing insulin is, like, actually mixing it is pretty straightforward. The way I do it is I draw insulin out of both vials, and that you don't have to do any special mixing type fancy type stuff. You just draw to both bottles, and then it just mixes in the reservoir naturally. But it seems like the little bit of faster insulin gives you the little bit of faster action time. And even though the regular rapid acting is slower, my experience and observation has been it doesn't slow it down. You get the same peak, but you don't get the issues with site pain or issues in the tubing and stuff like that some people have talked about. So you kind of get the benefits of ultra rapid without as many of the downsides. and then both types of insulin last a little bit longer because you're using a little bit less of each because you've got two kinds of insulin going in instead of one. That's my take on it. I don't know if Chris or anybody else wants to comment on the process or philosophy of their mixing and how they do it.
Well, my thoughts on there are, for starters, you probably want to stick within the same manufacturer if possible. If you're used to using Humalog and you want to mix a faster insulin with it, you should probably mix Lyumjev, just because they're using the same preservatives and the same components, and you're a lot less likely to have issues there. And the same thing, obviously, with Novolog or NovoRapid, and then and Fiasp as the other ultra rapid that's currently available. But yeah, I've seen reduction in the sort of adverse effects of using it, less occlusions or times where it seems like the site just stops working, less pain on bolusing, things like that. But apparently there's still enough of whatever it is that they're adding in to improve the absorption to make it still have the desired effect.
Dana, do you or have you over the years, recent times, inject yourself with normal pens, or like when was the last time you did that?
I am probably one of the very few people with diabetes who've never used a pen, and I've only used syringes. But that's because I was diagnosed in 2002. I started using syringes, and then I went on a pump 6 to 8 months after I was diagnosed, and then I had syringes, so I used syringes, and that was always my backup, as I had vials to fill my reservoirs and I had syringes to use in the vials, and it never made sense for me to get pens, and I've been on a pump basically for 19 plus years now.
Do you ever use syringes then?
Really don't remember the last time I used a syringe. One thing that I have experimented with in the last couple of years is I have a standing filled prescription of an inhaled insulin that I use if like my pump site gets ripped out and I've got a really like a non my insulin is not working, I have a high, like the pump site was kinked or something, I'll use the inhaled insulin to bring my blood sugar down much more quickly while I've got a new pump site and insulin going. But thankfully that doesn't happen a lot, and I really can't remember the last time I used a syringe to inject insulin. It's probably been years. I've been pretty lucky, but I'm also, I try to stay on top of my pump sites because I'm using an AID system. So I'm very, very quick to put in a new pump site. I always have a pump site with me, or I've got them in the car, and I've got them stuck in Scott's backpack, and I've got one in my running pack. So it's usually just as easy to pop a new pump site on as it would be to use a syringe and inject. But that's my personal situation.
And how supportive is Scott with helping you with your diabetes and with everything?
Oh, I'm very spoiled. I love to tell the story of on our fourth date, I think it was, he planned the date and he surprised me by taking me roller skating. And we drove up to the roller skating rink. I'm like, oh, cool, we're going roller skating. And he got his rollerblades out of the trunk. And I went and said, why do you have this huge Costco, like super sized pack of juice boxes? Like, that's a weird thing to have in your trunk. Who has 50 juice boxes in their trunks? And he said, well, you know, on our last walk, you were telling me about always carrying carbs, and I thought it would be nice for you to have juice boxes in the car so that when we're out, you know, on a walk or a date or whatever, like, you've got supplies. And this was our fourth date, and his only exposure to diabetes was like our first three dates. And that was such a thoughtful, conscientious, sweet thing to do that I almost like burst into tears on the spot. I'm like, this is the nicest thing anybody's ever done. I'm keeping you.
You're pretty much thinking in your head, God, if he proposes now, it's a yes, isn't it? Blimey.
Along those lines, I'm like, this is the most thoughtful thing anybody's ever done. And he had responded to everything that I'd done, and he'd been asking questions on our third date about, help me understand why the lows happen, like what contribute, how can I help? And, you know, he really was like, oh, this is one thing I can do to help. Like, I never asked him to, at that point, to carry carbs or anything, but he was just so willing. And he's always been willing to, you know, have carbs in his pocket or his pack or carry an extra pump site or whatever. I've just been very, very lucky to find a boyfriend, now husband, partner, spouse, who is supportive on every single level, including physically carrying my stuff. It's lovely.
Brilliant stuff, isn't it? Love it. But yeah, that's amazing that he, after a couple of dates, he's going away and he's thinking these things and he's researching things and he's helping out and he's, yeah, I think that's just so supportive.
I was thinking if my girlfriend did that, she'd be a keeper, definitely.
Love it, I love it.
Send all of your boyfriends, girlfriends, partners my way and I will give them Scott's list of like every sweet imaginable thing that he's done as like a support person and give him a list. And if they do 20% of it, I think y'all will all be thrilled because yeah, it's good.
And how does he like support you with like, do you do cooking at home or does he do the cooking at home? Does he help like pre-plan the food and how much carbs are going in things and that, or do you kind of take that on yourself?
I don't cook a lot, but I have always been pretty good at carb counting. Like I said, when we built OpenAPS, it didn't have a big meal support thing because I didn't really need that. I just kind of had been pretty good about, you know, guessing, counting carbs and dosing, and that's fine. But really the last year with my GI stuff before I was diagnosed, I was trying all kinds of things. I had to eliminate onion and garlic, which included down to not eating anything that said it had natural flavors because that might have onion and garlic. So reading ingredients on food labels from celiac turned into reading food labels for all kinds of stuff. And now one of the things he really does to help is he's willing to like portion out foods for me. So if I buy a bag of chips and the serving size is, you know, X grams of fat and protein, I don't even care about carbs anymore. I'm like, I can do carbs. I need to know what's the fat and the protein. Yeah. And, you know, I say, you know, portion it out according to the bag. He's willing to pre-portion things out for me. Or I'll be like, hey, you're standing in the kitchen, grab that box and tell me how many grams of fat in a serving it is. So he just kind of tells me the count so I can decide how much enzymes to take, which is really, really awesome. One of the things I love about him is he sometimes will think ahead and know this is the juice boxes. Like that was the magical right thing to do. But if I teach him, like, this is the thing that's really, really helpful for me. It sounds dumb, but it's like a big thing for me. Like I hate pre-portioning food out, but I really like having the individual portions ready to go because then I can just grab them, dose and eat and not have to think about the math. I've already done that or gotten him to do it.
Yeah.
He's very much willing to do that. If I say like, hey, at some point in the next week, do X, like he will totally do X, which has been, especially with EPI, really, really helpful because it's like learning to carb count all over again, but you've got fat and protein that you're counting and dosing and trying to titrate. And it's been just kind of, you know, it's like getting diagnosed with diabetes. There's a huge learning curve and you have to learn how to carb count and dose your insulin and think about all the variables that influence it. That's actually been one of the hard parts about ultra running is, okay, if I'm actually hungry to eat something, I have to think about insulin and the insulin timing and how it's going to affect my blood sugar, but also, you know, how much enzymes to take. Oh, and by the way, I'm still running. Like I'm doing all this multivariable math and this multiple hormone enzyme dosing math and timing and trying to eat and still run. So little things that he does like food prep type stuff. If I, you know, give him a bunch of jobs of like, hey, put these in baggies. That's been really, really helpful. Like any tiny thing like that, that takes away the mental burden has been really helpful.
Thank you for sharing that. Honestly, it's amazing. Like, you know what I mean? I'm sure everyone here has their own stories to tell about how their partners or boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, whatever, friends, close friends, you know what I mean? They've got that support network that can support you, the person with diabetes. And it's lovely to hear that. And if anyone wants to come throughout the next sort of section, I want to come and share how their friends or people support them, then maybe that's a discussion we can go down. But
yeah, I think one of the hard things was learning how to ask for help and deciding like, what can the person without diabetes or without EPI do? Because on our first date, he's like, how can I help? I'm like, you can't. I'm an adult. I have diabetes. Like, I have it figured out. But he's like, well, at least help me understand. I know that you're doing all this stuff in your head. Help me understand what you're doing. And then by teaching him what I would do, we then figured out these tiny things that he could do that didn't feel like a big deal because I had been doing them. But once he took on those tiny little things, it's like, oh gosh, that actually was, it seemed small to him because he's not doing it all the time. But it actually became a big thing for me that was lifted off my plate. That was really like lifting something huge off my plate. And the same thing with EPI, like it's no big deal for him to portion out food, but to me, it's got all this emotional baggage, right? Of like thinking about this whole experience I've had. So I think that's one thing that I hope for people is when you do find somebody and they do want to step in and help, it can be hard to figure out how to ask for help, especially if you're freakishly stubborn and independent like I am. Like it's a kind of like, pride that I do it all myself, but
it's kind of like, what is their role?
Yeah. What is their role? And it evolves over time, and it's part of the relationship that you build, because you have a relationship with the diabetes. It becomes a thing that affects the other person too. So figuring that out can be a little bit of a learning process, but I think, you know, finding those ways to ask for help, identifying like something that you think is a big deal and you think that maybe they think is not a big deal and it's stupid for you to ask for help. It's not. It's absolutely not stupid for you to ask for help, even if it seems like something small. And it's probably less of a big deal for them than it is for you. And that's a great thing to ask them to do or to accept their help to do.
Tom, you were talking a minute ago about, you know, friends and partners and stuff. My best friend, we don't even spend that much time together, but every time he sees me, he could basically be a CGM for me. I don't know how he does it, but he can tell like how fast my sugars are going up or down, when I'm low, when I'm high, before my Libre sensor can. And I'm running that as kind of a CGM with a Diebox at the moment. And he still picks up on stuff well before that does.
He's like a human, I can't remember the terminology, and I don't want to say it wrong, but like the pets that can sense you're going low, he's essentially a human.
I was going to say he can't be doing it by smell, but maybe he is, I don't know. But he can genuinely tell, like, when we're out in a pub even.
You probably have a different physical behavior that you do in those situations, because I learned my best friend could tell when I was low because she said I started rubbing my nose when my blood sugar was dropping really fast when we were shopping.
That's a weird one.
Because I was like, exercise? Yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah.
I don't do it very often, but she started catching on that before I would figure out I was low, she would watch me rub my nose and be like, you're going low. Test and eat something. Like, let's stop now. So you probably have something like that physical behavioral that he's just noticed from you doing it. And that might be what
that's kind of awesome. But it can even tell, like, this is what I find weird. It can even tell when, even if I'm not low, when my sugars are going down fast, for example, or going up fast.
That's so cool.
It's awesome. It may not even be something that he's consciously aware of that he's picking up on. It may be something that's just triggering in the back of his mind that's, you know, that he's subconsciously learned to associate it with. And so it may not even be something where he's looking at you and going, oh, you're rubbing your nose or wiping your brow or whatever it is, the physical behavior that he might be seeing. It may not even be something that he's necessarily aware of. It may be a finger twitch or something like that he sees.
But possibly, yeah. I don't know. I just found it cool.
That's really cool. That's a friend to hang out with more.
Going back to the whole asking for and accepting help thing, it occurred to me that it's really sort of a weird dichotomy, because when you're first diagnosed, especially if you're diagnosed as an older child or a teen or an adult, you frequently get told, you know, that you need to learn how to do all of this. You need to learn how to handle all of this. A nurse can't follow you around and give you injections. You're not going to be able to call your consultant or your endocrinologist every time you need to give a new insulin dose. You're going to have to figure it out on your own. And so the sort, there's this weird sort of balance between needing to be independent and being told that you must be independent, and then getting to the point where you can accept help with some of the minor things with diabetes.